Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 31. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can feel free to follow them at on IG at Mint Inc. underscore USA. So this past week was a huge week for the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. And for me, over the weekend, I hit 10,000 followers on Instagram, which is just unbelievable. I remember after my first month, I had 226 followers, and I keep track of different milestones and keep track of followers at different points in time. But I just remember all the effort I was putting in when I had a small audience, and now I'm on the big stage, so to speak, and still putting in that same effort and time. But I just want to thank everyone who has been supporting, who has shared our information, who has just been there along the way, or even if you're new, even if you just started following today, I really appreciate you, and I just want to help people. That's really the goal of this. It's not a goal of followers or money. It's really just a goal of helping people. And I feel like everything else is a byproduct of helping people. And so something else important that happened this week is that the pre-sale for my ebook and webinar, How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, is available. And so it's been selling quite a lot since Wednesday. Pre-sales are available through Thursday, this Thursday, May 28th, and it will go to full price on the release day, which is Friday, May 29th. And the reason I made it is because I had to learn everything on my own for podcasting, just through research, and I spent hours and hours that I could have been creating and working on the podcast researching. And so I've compiled all the information that I've found in addition to additional research to show you how you can do it. And you don't have to have a podcast about business. You don't have to have a podcast about investing or about real estate. You can have a podcast about anything you're passionate about. And so you can have a podcast about traveling. You can have a podcast about swimming, about sports, about whatever your hobbies are. There are people who like what you like. And so, in the show notes, you'll find a link for it. Definitely grab it while it's on presale. I've also done a bunch of Instagram lives last week promoting it and also talking about different aspects of creating a podcast. So we spoke about overcoming fear to start your podcast, how to monetize your podcast, the benefits of having your own podcast. And yesterday on Sunday, we just had a general Q&A about podcasts. So, definitely something I want to help people with. So if you're interested in making a podcast or someone you know is interested in making a podcast, purchase it, let them know about it. And as part of the bundle, so the bundle is the ebook and webinar. The ebook is essentially the what. So it's what I did from A through Z and what you can do. And the webinar is the how. It's like the how I implement different things, what it looks like on a day-to-day basis, and how you can replicate that. So that's available. So definitely grab that. And we also have a bunch of new resources in the show notes. I became an affiliate for additional people because, I want to find more ways to help you all make money, more ways to help you all, grow your social media, learn about real estate. So we have a bunch of new resources that you'll notice in the show notes. Take a look, grab one of them. Let me know if you have questions about any of them, and I'll be more than happy to answer that. And before we get into it, don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment. It helps us reach more people. It helps us move up in the rankings. Also follow on Twitter at Bread Podcast, at BRED Podcast, and sign up for our email list. By signing up for our email list, you'll get discounts, additional content, resources, and our newsletter, which goes out periodically. So without further ado, happy Memorial Day to everyone. Thank you to all our veterans for their service. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited for this episode today. Here with me, I have Austin Smith out of Newark, New Jersey. Austin, thank you so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Nah, absolutely, man. Not a problem at all. Thank you for having me along, being able to grace the platform with some of the other amazing guests that have come on, considering the fact that, these are heavy hitters. So I'm glad, kind of with the request that you so I can provide some valuable content as well. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. Everybody has some value they can provide,
That's a
for
fact.
sure. For sure. So first, I'd love to hear more about what your childhood was like and what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
Oh, interesting. And I talk about this all the time, all the time. This is a good, and that's actually a really, really good question. When it comes down to money, I think I'm talking to my wife about it. I think there's the quote that you will make 10% less than what, or you're conditioned already to make 10% less than the highest grossing family member. Right. So I'm not saying that that's a statistic or that there's any, fact behind it, but like the saying is. And I thought that was pretty interesting because, my story isn't a rag to riches. I didn't grow up necessarily in poverty. Standard middle class, a vacation here and there with the kids, nothing extravagant, nothing crazy. But then again, not coming from extreme poverty as well. Parents weren't doctors and lawyers. Like, we weren't the Huxtables or anything like that. Just two hardworking parents, decent salary, right? And, wanting to provide for their kids to be in the best environment, at least when it comes down to education and schooling and things like that. But the one thing that I will point out the most is that when it comes down to at least watching your parents, or at least me watching my parents, they were excellent defensive players when it came down to money and when it came down to wealth. So they knew to buy a home. They knew to invest in their 401k. They knew to play into their pension. They knew that they would have those opportunities. No problem. It's just the fact that those were very, very defensive, which were great. It's just that they never went on the offensive as far as using the assets and the cash and the wealth that they already had created to then expand into things that were either going to grow in value or provide some type of residual income or anything like that. That was the only thing. So they were great at defense, and that's why their household is stable. That's why in our area where there's a lot of gentrification on, they're chilling, right? So their property values and their wealth is just going up by the minute. So it's just that they also, as far as timeline wise, could have maybe put the gasoline on the fire and exploded the wealth quicker if they also played the offensive game to win the championship of money, essentially. So
definitely. How do you feel like that impacted you as a kid or in your adulthood, as you took your own journey in life?
I'll tell you. So, it's a popular, I don't want to say belief, but obviously conditioning where I thought, obviously, like most people, obviously we knew the get the job and go to college and things like that. But it wasn't that it was, get a really good job, get a really good income, and you'll be set. All right. So, which is majority of our conditioning in the beginning. But what it did essentially is that it made it harder to comprehend big money. So when getting into real estate and you start to like obviously network and deal with people that are moving big, big money, you have to go through a mental shift first to allow you to one, accept that. So now that I've gotten that, that's amazing. But going through that whole entire process, it's a challenge because you're not used to seeing that. So if your parents are doing one thing, especially if you consider them your superheroes and obviously people that you look up to and people that you were blessed to be in the atmosphere of. However, that atmosphere will condition your psychology or your thoughts or beliefs about money. Add to the fact that, we don't have any immediate family members that are doing it on a huge level. People are doing great, no problem, but on a huge level. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have that. So you go to a decent middle school, a prep school as a high school, and then you go to a state school for college, but obviously we weren't putting ourselves in environments where people talking about making $40,000 a month was a bad month for them. You know what I mean? Where us, a bad month was if you couldn't pay the bills. So if you couldn't pay the bills, and if that's considered a bad month, then I just have to have a good month, meaning I just have to take care of my bills, right? So like when that's young, or if you're not seeing, not so much the luxury vacations or anything like that, but just the attitude towards money of, hey, own this, or the reason why I do this is because of that. That, you know, that'll stick with you whether you believe it or not. And mm-hmm. then it's not until you get into atmosphere or energies or circles or networks where they challenge that whole entire belief, does that actually change internally for you?
For sure. For sure. So that kind of segues into the next question. So with that being said, you know, you mentioned your parents, they played good defense, but as far as kind of expanding the great ground they were building on, it kind of just stopped there. And, you know, you also mentioned how it kind of, you know, impacted you as you got into different circles and things of that nature. So that brings me to the question of, you know, why real estate? You know, why did you decide that, you know, you wanted to own a home and kind of grow in that direction?
I knew investing was always big for me. So I knew, you know, I majored in finance in school. So I knew eventually, you know, once I got into, you know, my late teens, I was very, very, you know, money conscious after seeing a few things, being exposed to a few things. So I was really, really kind of money conscious on what to do, what to do next. So I had that basic understanding. But in the beginning, it started off really heavily with Forex trading, actually. Mm-hmm. And so the goal was to be able to work from wherever, pull in, you know, 70K on a trade and teach people how to do the same. So long story short, that didn't work out as planned. Forex trading is a lot harder than what it seems. But obviously there are people that are out there being successful. The reason why I didn't become successful is because I didn't beat on my craft the same way that I'm beating on my craft with real estate. Also, I was a lot younger. So obviously the tolerance for, or the lack of patience at that age and the youth mindset of what it actually takes to be successful in any field, any craft, any endeavor, just wasn't there. So I was looking for something different. Obviously, I was at a job. It was my first job, first and only full-time job after college, mm-hmm. where I was working for a manufacturer that made LED lighting products, mm-hmm. which was a basic entry-level job, first thing out of college, just something that you can say that you have a salary and benefits and something that every now and again you can go dressed up to work to feel important. Right? So that was cool, but obviously the money's not matching that, nor is what I'm actually doing matching that. So I had mm-hmm. to find something different. And real estate, I remember a guy was talking, or I had a buddy of mine that was actually in the business who was talking about it. And I always saw myself, you know, being some type of agent. Like mm-hmm. I would have clients. I didn't know how, but obviously I was going to be service oriented. So I knew it was going to be in a service kind of industry because that was just the personality, the nature, kind of what I was used to. And once I got that job, it was great while it lasted, but obviously, you know, we all need more. So what's the next endeavor? And real estate was, when he mentioned it, I knew I was going to get into real estate. I had no doubt about it. It's just the fact that I didn't know that I was going to then quit my job, go into being an agent full time. Mm-hmm. to then turning that into investments and things like that. But it all stems back to what I was originally looking to accomplish with Forex. Right. So now the passion is the same, it's just that the vehicle's different. And I have a spiritual component to it as well, but that's it. You know, as far as directing the paths and things like that, but, you know, so that's when a lot of doors started opening, at least on the real estate end, but that's how I got into the business.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, I like the fact that something else took you there. You know, you had what remained, and we, you know, we were still very early on, of course, but what remained true was the desire, right? So, you know, you did the Forex thing for certain reasons, but, you know, hey, whatever, it didn't work out for you. And you're like, how can I channel this energy? How can I channel this ambition into something else? So I really like that.
Yeah. And, because you'll know, anybody that's listening, you'll know the biggest thing, right? I mean, The bigger thing is obviously your spiritual direction, but right under that is the passion that's inside, which can kind of go and tie into the spiritual aspect of it as far as the passion. But you'll know when you're in that right craft where literally everything surrounding your life now becomes experiences, lessons, and ideologies about how to make your craft better. So once you get into that, where now everything is like, you know, you're tying it into your craft, or how can I tie spirituality in my craft? How can I tie my friends, family into my craft? How can I tie my physical, you know, exercise like into my craft? And just knowing, then you start making these connections where, you know, when you're really beating down on your craft, you work at it in all like aspects of it. So that's how you'll definitely know. That's for sure.
For sure. For sure. So can you walk us through your first purchase?
At that point I was still, you know, I was agent. Well, still agent. That's the, that's the full-time job. And then the, investments keep the money coming in. Everything just gets siphoned right into the investments. But, I was helping a couple people do it. And I was like, wait a minute. Like when it comes down to numbers, I understand what's happening. I was always going to do it anyway. I always thought to myself, like for my first property, like I'm going to buy a multifamily. I'm going to stay in the basement and I'm going to rent out the other units. Right. So I already like knew because, and here's another reason why, because one, after I graduated college, I was staying at home for a while with family. Blessed to say I have the opportunity. If anybody has that opportunity, you stay at home until you buy your first property. Right. So staying at home, which for a single guy is okay when he's stacking and has a plan in place and things like that. When he meets his girlfriend that ultimately becomes his future wife, she don't want to hear that you staying at home with your parents, rightfully so, completely understand. So we moved in together, and I'll never forget, we moved in together, and I remember paying rent the first time. Like, and mind you, we were paying $1,000 for the studio and we were splitting that. So it was like $500. And at that point I had just quit my job to go into real estate full time. So I wasn't even like making a crazy income, but I had stacked enough money from while I was staying at home. That's one thing I will say. I was just definitely smart about using that opportunity to my advantage, because that allowed me to quit my job while having a safety net to say that if things went completely haywire, I'm good for at least a year and some change. Like, so while young, where I don't have the responsibility of at that point having a wife, having kids, you know, things like that. So I can take the risk. So while staying, you know, I'll never forget, and she was cutting me a break. So thank my wife for that. So she, at that point I was giving up $400. And I remember handing over $400 like for rent. And I was like, hell no. Like, no, there's no way that I'm going to go from living rent-free, regardless of the situation, I don't care, regardless of the situation, to now paying rent. Like, that's out. So at that point, the plan was in place. Now, what I didn't also realize is that when you quit your job, banks do not like you at first. So when it comes down to lending, you are now considered at a much more higher risk than the individual that is on a W-2. So the only thing I probably would have done different is I would have bought my property first and then quit my job. However, it is what it is. I have no regrets at all. And we, at that point, I couldn't get the loan. So looking at my then girlfriend at the time, who I think we both know and we understood like where our relationship was going, we decided to partner on the deal together. So I found the property, we bought it together, we put the mortgage in her name, right? And I remember my attorney like, you know, do you trust this girl and everything like that, yada, yada. And I just remember, you know, just thinking in my head, like, one, we don't know what's going to happen. That's the like reality of it. However, for the 5,000 or 6,000, whatever money like that I was about to put up versus the risk to reward ratio of like what I could have got back, it was null and void. Like even if it completely failed, some of us, not me, not, you know, anybody, or Some of us are regretting our degrees, and them things cost $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. So God forbid I lose this money. I have a house that I had no attachment to. It's just cash, so I'm not hooked on any debts. And then the best thing that can happen is that I'm living for free, I'm making income, and then I wind up marrying the girl anyway, which yep. wound up happening anyway. So, like, as far as the risk, like, I could have cared less. I would have took that opportunity hand over fist to put down only 3.5% down, concession included, so we don't have to worry about closing costs. Live for free. By the time that you close, so if you close in the beginning of the month, so say if you close on June the 1st, your mortgage payment doesn't come out until August. So right off the bat, if you can get 10 to 10 at any time during June, that's straight profit. July, straight profit. And then your monthly income doesn't come in. I mean, your monthly mortgage doesn't come in until that following month. Right. So right off the bat, I've already accrued half my money before we even got tenants into the property. I mean, before the mortgage even came out. Like, wow. So risk versus reward. So we put it in wifey's name, FHA, bought a two-family, finished the basement, stayed in the basement, rented out the other two units. We were making about, I don't know, maybe $600 or $700 a month. About that.
Wow.
So yeah.
That's
try to go really nothing good. less than $1,000.
Wow. That is for cash amazing. Flow. That is amazing. Yeah.
Living from rent free, changing life. And because she helped me, just with like holding me down, like while I was building the business, while I didn't have, you know, I tell the story, I made $5,000 my first year, $5,000. Or at least that's what I claimed on my tax returns. The gross was like $15,000. But no money at all. But obviously once you hit that bend, that's where real estate is a really snowball type of business. Mm-hmm. And once you're in the mix, that things like really start to pop off and you're like, okay, this is why I joined it for sure.
Wow. Yeah. Something I want to make sure we don't pass over is partnership in multiple ways. So it's obvious you found the right person. And I think a lot of people may have had too much pride to have their partner on the loan because, you know, they're in a particular situation in between jobs, what have you, right? But I think it's a really great thing that you saw the bigger picture, you know, because on your end, you're like, you know what? I know I'm going to have a future with this person. Mm-hmm. Real estate is something I'm knowledgeable about and I think would help us as a family as we grow into the future. And so you swallow your pride and, you know, basically day one, once you get tenants in, you're making income. And then you mentioned the cash flow you were making. I'm just thinking like the story could have been so much different if you didn't take that calculated risk. You know what I mean? So I think it's really admirable that you saw the bigger picture and you didn't mind that, you know, for now, this is just how it has to be done.
And to put even more of a risk factor on it, it was just the fact that like, and I don't know if it's the Gary Vee nature, but Gary Vee is like big on like, yo, dude, if you mess up, like what? Like when you really break down, like what happens if this messes up or doesn't happen? Like when you really break down the worst case scenarios, they're not that bad. They're honestly not that bad. And here's for everybody, right? And I have people that like are well, cash ready, but won't pull the trigger because of whatever reason, X, Y, Z. Let me tell you something. I'll never forget because it was such a, and to the testament, I'll never forget. I was getting into my second year. So I obviously got through the first year, which at that point was a dud. And going into the second year, I had just started to get like, you know, consecutive closings or kind of a back-to-back closing scenario. And I'll never forget, I had just closed on a deal. The check was like, I think $6,000. Yeah, I think the check was about $6,000 or so. And mind you, taxes have to come out of that, right? Because we get our whole check up front. So I think I put like $1,000 or $2,000 to the side for taxes. And as soon as I received the check, and mind you, this is one of like the first checks of the year. And you know, again, I still haven't had like built that business. It wasn't until like a little bit after that we really like gotten into very, very consistent, great income. But that opportunity presented itself when I had just made, I had just closed a deal, I had just made a check, and I turned around. When I didn't, like, I still didn't have, like, a crazy ton of money in the bank. I had depleted through a little bit of my savings. Closing when that happened, so I couldn't count on income coming. Deals are falling apart. This is just what happens in the business on a day-to-day, even if you're a million-dollar producer. And the opportunity presented itself, and I literally took the same check that I had just got, put some money to the side for taxes, and then rolled everything back in to the opportunity. So, you know, as soon as I got some money, I literally was without money again.
Right.
But it was for a big opportunity. Now, right now, it probably is $125,000 in equity. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, still in for free. And once moving out of here, it probably would generate around $1,400 to $1,500 over, like, so now, like, hell yeah, it was a good move. But it's always when I didn't feel like pulling the trigger or was like a little hesitant of pulling the trigger that I made the most money. That's for sure.
For sure. For sure. That's amazing. That's amazing. So what was it like for you two just being first time landlords? Like, was it tough finding tenants? Any horror stories? Like, how did that go? And also, what year was that in?
So we bought that in 2017.
Oh, wow. Pretty recent. Okay. So yeah, how was it starting off?
Our thing was, we wanted to be landlords, but we wanted to also have kind of like an Airbnb, you know, kind of service mentality. Like, we didn't, you know, we don't want to be slumlords. We want to do everything by the book. As long as y'all keep happy, like, stuff breaks, we'll fix it, mm-hmm. and we'll be good. Just let us know what you need, and we just want our bread before the 5th, or there'll be a late fee, whatever the case, and we're good, no problem. Here's what I did learn. One, be careful what you offer the tenant as far as appliances, because now you're going to be responsible for those. So, for example, washer and dryer, which for us, or me at least, I was like, yeah, we should offer washer and dryer. We'll be able to get more in rent. True. Absolutely. Until you figure out what your actual purchase plan of the washer and dryer is, because two new sets of washer and dryers is bread. Like, they're not cheap at all. Like, two brand new, like a brand new set, and I was offering this for two tenants. So two sets of washers and dryers. Like, so obviously, you know, spoke too soon, because at that point it would have ended up at about $2,000, $2,400 just in washer and dryer. Like, no, we're not doing that. And then, so because I offered it and because I made that part of the stipulation why we were demanding the amount of money that we were, I had to uphold my end of the bargain and find a couple of washers and dryers. So that led me to go on Craigslist or, you know, Facebook Marketplace. I use Craigslist. You know, the hassle of going out, you know, you can't test drive a washer and dryer per se. Most of the time they're already disconnected and put off to the side in somebody's garage. So the hassle of going, you know, looking at it, finding a way to then pick it up, deliver it, get it through the door. Okay, let's go find another set somewhere else for a decent price, a decent price so we can get the tenants what they need. Lo and behold, one of the washers doesn't work. Now all of a sudden the other dryer doesn't work. So learn my lesson just on the appliances, whether that's that, microwaves, stoves, fridge, you know, some state laws, depending on where you're at, they must have a stove, but they can bring their own fridge, you know, whatever you offer, just make sure that it's in the best condition or that it's already there and pre-existing. So if you're thinking about doing that, just factor that into the budget. And then the only other thing I'll say is that when it comes down to repairs, always check. Cause I remember my tenant had a clogged toilet, right? Mm-hmm. Landlord problem 101, right? Clogged toilet. So we're like, all right, no problem. And I was like waiting for this because I was like, I can't wait to not be hands-on when it comes down to making repairs, because I'm not making repairs. I got somebody on the phone that can handle these repairs. Here's what you need to know. You need to have a contractor and you need to have a handyman. There's a difference. And contractors are going to charge you contractor prices, and handymans are going to do the same. as far as handyman prices. So I learned two lessons in that day. One, have a handyman. And two, always check the actual repair. If you're in, and obviously if you're in the neighborhood, I'm not talking about anybody that's managing property out of state. That's what you have a property manager in place for, most likely. But checking the repair, because she had a clogged toilet. She tried plunging it. She did all that she could do. She did all these things. It's not working. Cool. Call my contractor. Mistake. He leaves a job, obviously, that he's making a lot more money than coming in assessing a clogged toilet. He comes in. He plunges it three times, and then the problem solved. He charged me $100, rightfully so, because at that point I was paying for his time.
Wait, did you say he just plunged it?
He just plunged it. That's like that. That's what. That is the exact reason why.
I don't mean to laugh, but
like, and it's real though. But it's like it's real, and of course the tenant's like, yeah. Oh, well, I thought I was doing everything. Of course you thought, like, you know, but...
She probably just plunged it once.
Yes, of course. But those were the two biggest things that I learned, at least in that day. Check your tenant's repairs, whatever they're mentioning, assess the damage, take pictures, whatever the case. But just, you know, and try to fix it yourself. Some things, honestly, are fixable yourself. Whether you want to spend the time is another story. But if you have the time, some things are actually fixable. You'd be surprised, because these people that are doing their trades and plumbings and electricians and things like that, they've only been doing, you know, it just way longer than you. But outside of that, they're a human just like you. And obviously they had to learn how to, you know, wrap black with green or whatever the case. I'm not doing any electrical work or no plumbing work, but any type of other like small work I can, you know, try at least. YouTube University or something. Because if not, then you're going to have to pay somebody, and obviously that's coming at your profit.
For sure. Yeah. So do you offer fewer appliances now?
It's not so – well, wash and dryer, I definitely don't. It depends. And again, it depends on the property.
Yeah.
So like the second property that we bought, we didn't have – you know, and here's another thing I learned. The second property that we bought, which happened to be right around the corner from first, the seller actually left the washer and dryer in the unit, right, or in the basement. So I only offered it to one floor, and I was like, okay, listen, I don't know the condition of the washer and dryer. However, if you want to go use it, you're more than welcome to use it. No problem. So that's cool, except now it's just the fact that you have tenants in parts of the home that maybe you don't want them in per se, because whatever the case, somebody gets curious, somebody, you know, touches something, somebody like whatever the case. So you got to like keep that in mind. But lo and behold, they kind of brought their own washer and their own dryer. You know, we noticed it on the water bill a little bit, but you know, so those are the things that you got to pay attention to, because when you're running your analysis in the beginning and you're like, oh, water should only cost 100, 120, and it comes out to, you know, 175 or two, again, it's just profit, but that's why you make the money off the buy. So as long as you increase that profit margin as much as possible, when those things inevitably happen, you'll still make out with a great, great profit.
For sure. So talk to us about the next transaction. Where did things go from that first property? And you know, you also mentioned it was right around the corner. So we'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, it was, and both these properties came off the MLS. These were, you know, when prices were kind of rising. And just because, you know, just me being in as an agent, you know, I just had a specialized knowledge. It was like me being in the field, me being an investor, you know, like I just knew what to do. I knew I was already helping a bunch of people do it. So it was just running. It's just numbers. Like it just was running numbers. So that property, at that point, my 2 years had finally kicked in. So I was able to get the mortgage, just being on a 1099. So I grabbed the second one, and I'll never forget. It came out in the morning. I woke up, did whatever I did. And then right when I got to work, the first thing, which I was working from home, I pulled it up. I looked at it. I realized that it was around the corner. It was, you know, numbers wise, price wise, bedroom, bathroom, like all of that, spot on. Mm-hmm. Walked around the corner, met the seller. I only saw the second floor. Did I see the third floor as well? I'm trying to think. Best case scenario, I saw the second floor and the third floor. Worst comes to worst, I only saw the second floor. I don't remember what's off my head, but I 110% did not see the first floor. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's do it. Let's wrap it up. Like, let's, you know, walked back home, typed up the offer, submitted it. And I was like, let's like telling the agent, like, let's go. Like, let's like tell the seller we're ready to go. We can start attorney review today, because I knew that, because it was on the MLS, it was going to get into a bidding war. And I'm just thankful that I got it at the price that I did.
Yeah.
Just being able to move so quickly, because during that transaction, so we locked in the price and we're going through the transaction. Comes time for the appraisal. We were all in at 275, with concession included. So we only have to worry about a down payment. Oh, and if anybody that has a license, obviously you're making the commission. Oh, that was another thing. Like, I made it, like, we were also making commission off of it, off the first property. So like the total down payment was like 10 or 12, but with the commission coming back all in, it was like 4,500 or $6,000 total between the both of us. So like, no brainer.
So you made commission off your own deal? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that? I don't want to pass over that.
Because at that point, one, I'm still only her girlfriend. I mean, I'm still only her boyfriend at that point. Mm-hmm. I'm not going on the mortgage, or nor am I going on title. So technically, this is not my property. And three, as long as I disclose that I am an agent, there's no problem at all. Absolutely no problem at all. So for anybody, at least, you know, and this is something that's crazy, because you can't. I think Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets says it the best. Real estate is the only field where insider trading is legal. So you can find out the story of the seller, what's causing them to move. You can find out how much they owe. You can find out how much, you know, what their situation is, everything like that. On top of it, if you're an agent, you can represent yourself as an agent. It'll be better to, I learned later, still have your broker do it. They'll still pay you the commission, but just have your broker facilitate it, just to keep it as arm length as possible. But still, no matter what, as long as you disclose, always, always disclose, and not disclose. It's simple. Like, I am an agent. Here's what we're doing, X, Y, and Z. Because for the seller, at least for a listed property, you're going to wind up paying the commission anyway.
Right.
So, like, it don't matter about that. And you get a commission as well. So it's just, it lessens the blow of the amount of money that you're in, right? Like, as far as to take down the deal. So we're buying the second one, we're under contract, we do the appraisal, and we were all in at 275. The appraisal comes back in at 275. Cool, no problem, because I'm not, you know, I only wanted to appraise for 275. I'm good with that. But then we find out it has an oil tank. We find out it has an oil tank. We find out that there, which for an oil tank for everybody on the East Coast, or I don't know if it's anywhere else, to be honest with you, but homes used to be fueled and heated by oil. Mm-hmm. Which was great back in the day until we found out how much contamination that it can cause when it's in the ground and it starts to seep everywhere, neighbors' properties, into the water, things like that. So bad, bad, bad thing for oil tanks. So when that happened, the seller had to remediate it, but it took so much time. It took, you know, it took about 8 months to close that deal. And
oh, well, 8 months?
About 8 months to close that deal. And oh, I had no... And you realize it after, but, you know, God really doesn't make no mistakes, because the city, Newark, was continuing to appreciate. So by the time after six months go by, you need a new appraisal. So we're ready to close, and the mortgage company's like, we need a new appraisal. So we're like, oh, my goodness. So whatever. We had to bring out another, you know, we had to pay them $150 to do a reinspection fee. We bring them out. The appraisal comes back $100,000 above our 275. It comes in at 375.
In six months.
And we had just, there was a property I closed next to us that gave us a real boost, and it closed right in time. And the appraiser was able to use that comp. I'll never forget. Me and wifey was at the Bronx Zoo. I think it was like vacation that I was taking off, or we were getting ready to go somewhere. And a mortgage offer calls, and he's just like, dude, your appraisal came back at $100,000 more. So I was like, yeah. And at that point, I'm like, yo, we need to close this deal now because I don't want, like, anything else to, like, happen. I don't want, like, let's get it closed. I remember the seller was like, at one point, was like, you know, well, what the appraisal come back? Can we see the appraisal? I'm like, we're not, we don't need to see the appraisal. We just need to close. Like, that's it. Like, let's just get it closed. So, you know, it was a blessing, you know? It was definitely a blessing.
Wow. So you basically got the property for $100,000 under its actual value.
Yeah. But to point out, I don't look for that. I'm not looking for appreciation. I only look for cash flow. However, I knew with this particular property, and everybody knows when they're familiar with how their homes in their market are set up, but I knew I can add 2 bedrooms because if I were to remove a dining room, keep the living room, and turn the dining room into a bedroom, tenants don't need a dining room. They're not using a dining room. It's not a necessity. You can get top dollar market rent without a dining room. No problem. So we convert those into third bedrooms and increase the value. So I knew I was going to be able to at least add maybe, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 in equity just by adding, 2 more bedrooms. But when it came back at $100,000, I was like, yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're at 6 now, right?
So 6 units. Yep. Units. That was a 3-family. That one was a 3-family. So 6 units. We're under contract on another 3 units. That one we're just ping ponging. That one's in wifey's name. So now wifey's time is up. We're using FHA again. How? Because the original property that we bought in Newark, we refinanced that into a conventional loan. And you can buy and use another FHA loan in an area where it's considered an upgrade. So, for example, you're moving into a much bigger property. Either it has some better features that you don't currently have, whether that's a garage or a much more a bigger backyard. If it's in a better school district, if it's in a better area completely, you can use your FHA again. So we're under contract on another 3 units using our FHA loan. And so wifey's turn is up for that. And then we just started talks with an individual who has, check this out. It's three units. The basement's finished and is an apartment. And he has an industrial sized garage where a scaffolding company pays them $1,000 a month in rent just to rent out the garage. So I met with that seller last week. I've been talking to him for 4 months. So for anybody that's listening, like when you are coming in contact with people who are thinking about selling, thought about selling, the fortune is in the follow-up. I followed up with him for 4 months, like, you know, hey, we'll get together when COVID ends, no problem. I reach out to him on the regular. How's the family doing? Hope everybody's doing well. Just to let you know, I'm still interested. Just keeping that. I just visited him last Saturday. I walked through the property. Property is like numbers are crazy. So that would be my turn to purchase. Awesome. Now, I can't do FHA because that property is still in Newark. So I don't really have an, you know, I might be able to say the garage, or I might be able to say, you know, I don't have much to say. And personally, I don't feel like going into a competition with the underwriter about why, you know, I need to be buying this property. For the one that my wife is currently, for the 3-family that we're currently under contract with, it's just in a much better area, just like night and day. They have never questioned me about anything. I've been moving through this whole entire process as if I never owned a home before, because they know that you're going from north to, and the place is called Bloomfield, but it's just a night and day area. No questions asked. So we'll see what happens, but I'm meeting him again on Saturday. And for that particular deal, what I would actually do is I would actually sell our second property, because what I want people to realize is that you eventually will have a return on equity, and most people will just focus on the cash flow that's coming in. So for example, when we originally were planning on buying the second property, FHA, 3.5% down, I think total was like 10 or 11 grand down, no problem. And then we were going to make, you know, about $1,000 a month on it, or like average. So cool, no problem. It's just the fact that now because there's $125,000 in equity in that property, even to play with easy numbers, if there was $100,000 in equity, and if you're making $1,000 net profit, which, you know, we made some repairs, I just replaced the water heater, things like that. Mm-hmm. You're making $1,000 a month net profit over the year, $12,000. $12,000 on the $100,000 is just 12% return on equity.
Right.
Not return on investment, return on equity. Your investment you've already made back. So you made great cash on cash return when it comes to that. However, right. It just points out how that equity is basically the same thing as dead cash. So what I would do is the same $100,000 in equity, or in this case, $125,000 in equity, I would move that, take that $125,000 in equity, move that to the new property, right? This three family that has five income potential units coming from it. And my mortgage payment would be almost, if, or it would be about $400 for this five units, it would be about $400 more than the current mortgage payment at the second property. However, because again, I'm putting down, right? So even if you 1031 exchange, and if you get into that, like, you know, ordeal, sell, like I would sell, take those profits, dump it right into it, tax-free, $125,000. The equity is still there. Equity hasn't changed. If the market values drop, so what? It was going to happen at the second property. Equity stayed the same. But now instead, there's a potential for at max, $2,500 a month as far as net profit. Wow. Versus the $1,000 in net profit. And right. That property is a little bit more in better condition. So when it comes down to maintenance and repairs, those will be less, which means I get to keep more of that income. So just like, you know, we'll see what happens. But I'm meeting with him again. We've already talking about, you know, me buying. So hopefully he'll let me, you know, still purchase it. And, but yeah, so we'll see what happens. But
so the future's bright, man.
As it should be, as long as I keep God first.
For sure. That's, man, what I really like about this is, and before, how involved is your wife? Are you kind of like the brains behind it? And she's kind of like, all right, what is the plan? All right, it sounds good. Go. What is that relationship like?
When it comes down to, the visionary, right? As a visionary, and you know, wifey's the backbone, right? So in that particular case, she just understood, and she's like, you know, so she was, like I said, we were talking. She's from Inglewood. She's born in LA. After school, she moved over to New York, finished her master's. We wind up meeting in DC, and then lo and behold, she winds up moving to Jersey, and then we wind up moving in together. So adaptation wise, like, she's very good at that, and she's very accustomed with things not going with how the picturesque version of it. So in this case, meeting me, I was talking about it so much that it was like, listen, you know, not in a disrespectful way, but it was like, I'm going to do this, like, regardless of the fact. I just think that, you know, it just made too much sense not to do. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, when you explain the benefits, things like that, but you also, she also just, you know, and again, just from a spiritual nature, that's why, you know, she's my partner in particular, because I realized that every person, whether male or female, might not have the original goal of finishing the basement, staying in the basement, like, you know, colder down there. Like, you know, we went through some things down there. So not everybody would be on board for that per se, but they would, you know, trust their particular spouse's vision. So, you know, I got to ride it down on that aspect. So that's probably the biggest attribute. But once we cracked the first property and it was like, oh, okay, like, just let me know the numbers that are like, you know, I manage like both of our funds when it comes down to the investing. It's like, she's completely on board because, you know, obviously, you know, we're doing this together and this is for the family. And, you know, I've already proved the benefits, you know what I mean? Through thick and thin. Sure. So.
Man, that's powerful. That's powerful. Right. I really like the fact
that she runs the books. Like, she runs the accounting aspect of it. Things are pretty easy, you know, cause it's, you know, we've got a certain amount of units, and even like, if we grab these two next ones, managing wise, the properties run themselves as long as you put proper tenants in place. And if you're buying properties that don't cause you more repairs, properties are going to run themselves, right? But once after a certain point, we'll really get into a real operational, you know, we'll really have to like focus on operations, and that's where she'll be a part of it. Cause then eventually we don't want to be attached to it at all. But at the same time, we don't necessarily want to hire a property manager per se, because I can still get tenants in, like I do, you know, and I would rather do it, and I do it for clients. I do it as an agent. I'm still definitely going to do it for myself. So it's not so much that. And when it comes down to repairs, we're not doing the repairs anywhere. We're calling and da-da-da-da. And we have our team that will go and do their thing. But, you know, there are other operations as far as the accountants, the books, managing expenses, the taxes, making sure those things are in order, tenant files, tenant requests, tracking the ROI on the property, making sure that, you know, things are straight. So we'll get more into that later, you know, because my strength is just closing the deals, and her nature more operationally, you know, and her nature is she's much more of the operations.
That's awesome. What I like about that is, you know, once you two get to a place where, you know, maybe you hire somebody in-house to take care of certain parts of it, you've already done everything. So you know what your expectations are. You know what things should be. I mean, I just think that partnership you two have is so key, you know, and, you know, for anybody out there who is looking for a partner perhaps and is interested in real estate, this interview is something you may want to consider just when thinking about if your goals might match with whoever it is you want to be with, man. Wow, that's really cool. You definitely have to keep me updated on how those two upcoming deals go.
That's trust me, you like, you know, lo and behold, man, you'll see it all over the gram. But you know, more importantly, you know, we're just trying to just follow suit, you know, take idea into action, and then action into results. So we're just following it step by step, and this is what it comes with. It's nerve-wracking because real estate is one of those things where it doesn't give you the immediate satisfaction of like a seller saying yes and then you closing the deal right then that second. It got to go through a whole process. You know, it's a relationship. You know, we're moving, you know, at least in my market, at least a couple of hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's, you know, it doesn't happen as quickly. So the nerves and the anxiety will rage through when you definitely want to make a move on this property, and you're just hoping that obviously, you know, everything goes straight, but it is what it is. But to your point, when it comes down to partners, you know, definitely, you know, I'm blessed to have a spouse that way. However, you know, when it comes down to spouses and everything like that, let your spouse be your spouse. It is what it is. If y'all happen to join in that aspect, cool, no problem. Obviously, it'll benefit if you join in some like-mindedness when it comes down to the vision of the financial stability of you know, the family. But aside of that, mine just happens to be my spouse. But this is for anybody that, you know, this is just a textbook example of teamwork makes the dream work. If you want to go, you know, fast, go by yourself. If you want to go far, go together. It's textbook. That's all, man.
For sure. Yeah. Sure. Couple more questions. So one thing I want to talk about is the Newark market. So as I mentioned, one of my close friends, he just closed on a property over there, and I've spent, you know, the last couple of times I've been back east, we've gone there. You know, during his closing, I was there for his inspection and all that stuff. We walked around a lot, and you can just tell like things are changing. You just it's one of those intangible things. Like you see new buildings going up, you see the visual of it is starting to change, and that's how it starts, right? So can you talk more about the Newark market? I know you're in it as an investor, of course, but also as an agent. So can you talk more about what's happening and where it's going in the future?
It's you know, it's the shock waves of everything that's happening in New York, you know, and for anybody that's listening, when it comes down to like even choosing a target market, you usually have your metropolitan area or a major downtown area, obviously, and then it trickles, you know, outward simply. So for Newark, where you have certain cities that, you know, so the first group of cities that's right across the border from New York, Hudson County, where you have Jersey City, Hoboken, some towns, you know, they exploded right off the rip because it's right off the train line for commuters. So Newark is just a town that is receiving a lot of that attention from investors, especially investors that are coming out of Brooklyn and other parts of New York. Obviously, Brooklyn's a main, you know, a main player, a very key player. Where now they're finding New Jersey's prices, which, you know, a lot more cheaper. So they've bid it, you know, they bid up, they've come in here. They've obviously have turned ugly homes beautiful, gets the city getting tax income from those properties back on its books. And then at that point, because it's 20 minutes away from New York, when it comes down to a downtown area, now everybody wants to work where they live, right? So nobody would have no problems with a 20-minute commute into New York. So now you create that environment for development of businesses and residential units. And it's just the shockwaves of what's happening pretty much in most of the parts of the area, or you know, most of the parts of the country where they're seeing a lot of gentrification in that aspect. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, it's just about being on the right side of gentrification and trying to take advantage while it is coming in.
Yep.
Because the reality is today, not tomorrow, not next year, not next month, not forever, today is that, and it's safe to say, that majority of the people that are investing in these communities are obviously people that are not from these communities, no problem. So when that happens, it's obviously taking, you know, your community and taking the funds that are coming from the outside community as the fuel for your money inside the community. So in this particular case, Newark is just a, you know, just a prime example. You know, we got multiple train lines, multiple, you know, means of public transportation into the city that can get you in there quick. And this is Manhattan, like epicenter as far as jobs, the New York Penn Station, where from there you're hitting all the boroughs, whatever you need mm-hmm. to go. But it starts with getting into New York somehow, at least if you're in New Jersey. And Newark is just one of those places, especially because things were cheaper. Now they're a little bit more expensive. But Newark is on the rise. Some people think that's going to be the next Brooklyn or, you know, Queens or whatever the case. I used to feel the same way. But at this point, you know, I'm just calling Newark Newark because, you know, Newark will just have its own characteristics. It'll appreciate in its own time. But definitely going forward, Newark's not, you know, in the long run, Newark would definitely not be forgotten about. And a lot of the commotion and a lot of the real gasoline started pouring on the fire when Amazon had, you know, its discussions about opening up mm-hmm. its second headquarters in Newark. Mm-hmm. So that definitely, and if Amazon's talking about that, then obviously, you know, we have plenty of big Fortune 500 companies that are here and they're just feeding off of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing, man. Wow. This has been a really great interview. I think what I enjoy most about it was just how strategic you've been the whole time. You know, think about it. Just starting from receiving that first check, right? First check in the beginning of the year, that you put towards a down payment, and every step from there, you've been very strategic. You've been very calculated with moves. And of course, you know, you learn along the way, you had lessons and stuff, but I think it's just super, it's very inspiring just to hear the progression of things and also to talk about where things are going. So man, I can't wait to see where you go in the future. And, you know, I think it's great. You have a great partner and you know, great business partner. Happens to be your spouse, but I mean, I think it's just also a testament to partnership, whether it's with a friend, whether it's with a spouse. There are a lot of principles that can be taken from this interview that can go towards any business partnership when it comes to real estate. So I appreciate you coming on, man. It was great chatting with you.
Nah, absolutely, man. If everybody, it's reading all the books so you find out before, and then when the when you're reading all the books, digesting all the content, you know what I'm saying? Like your podcast, anything that you've seen on social media, when you're digesting all of that, they start to become you and they start to become second nature. So you find out how to potentially set things up based off of what you learn and what you can, you know, what you can do. So, you know, the last thing I'll leave people with is that, you know, when it comes down to funding your deals or whatever the case, you know, even if you use a line of credit or a credit card, or, you know, whatever the case, using your credit. Because this, you know, the third property that we're purchasing, which is the reason why I love off-market deals, or deals that I can interact with just the seller, just me and them. I can, you know, we can come to a better price. We can come to better terms. That one, hopefully, he's actually allowing me to roll my commission into my mortgage, which is a good and bad thing. We'll save that for another episode. But lo and behold, I may be able to get the property, not so much scot-free, but without any money out of pocket. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. But if not, then, you know, I also just got a line of credit, a home equity line of credit. So anybody that has equity on their homes, go get a line of credit while the banks are offering it, you know, during this whole COVID madness and things like that. Because they gave me, $35,000, I think. They gave me $35,000 as line of credit, 3.25% interest. And if I need to cut the check from there, I can cut the check from there. And, you know, that's one property buying another. But it didn't start that way. It's always one step at a time. It comes with all the emotions of, you know, is this going to work and everything like that. But all you have to do is just, you know, do the action, and then the results will follow.
For sure. For sure. Lastly, yeah. Where can people find you? Where can people find out about your podcast and everything you're doing, or connect with you if they want to talk more about investing in Jersey?
You can find me on IG, Mr. M.R. Austin R. Smith. You can check out the Austin Smith Real Estate Podcast, which, similar to this podcast, is just looking to tap into the insights and bring that straight to the environment, because obviously this isn't something that's taught in college. This isn't something that's taught mainly throughout our families or anything like that. But we also don't want to make it a sexy conversation, right? Yeah. Real estate investing is one of those, like, it's very, very sexy dinner talk. Like, oh yeah, I want to get in the market. Oh yeah, you know, I want to own some property, things like that. It's very, very sexy, but we want to break down, like, what it actually is. How are people doing things? What, you know, meaning behind it? What happens if this happens? Strategy, maintenance, you know, all the concepts that go around it. Because obviously, as you know, you can tell just from people in 08, you know, people lost their shirts. And obviously, you know, real estate is things that, you know, you are responsible for. And God forbid, luckily I'm blessed that my tenants had paid during, you know, during COVID. And we showed them some love. We gave them for Mother's Day, we showed love. We gave some bottle of wines for the moms. And then for the guys that we have as tenants, you know, just left them I think it was a bottle of a bottle like Johnny Walker or something like that. Like, go ahead, enjoy. You know, thank you for paying the rent on time and things like that. And they loved it. And that's what it's all about, like having that respect, because there was one story where somebody had like a 15 unit or 20 unit building down in like Texas or wherever it was. And like all the tenants conspired together during COVID to like not pay. And, you know, Lord knows where, you know, her mortgage payment, Lord knows where that's at. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are real things that can happen. I mean, obviously COVID was a black swan, you know, as far as like an event, but these are things that can happen. So, but we want to bring that content to you. Your platform, honestly, I tip my hat off to your platform, because you're really out here really, really, really promoting. You have an awesome following just when it comes to that. Just take that platform and just continue, just, you know, and now we're going to be relying on you to continue to elevate, because eventually, not to say that the tip strategies and insights are going to be tapped out, but we're still going to be evolving, developing. What's next? How are we adjusting? So, you know, we're going to leave that up to you. So you got big shoes to fill, but, you know, we're counting on you for that.
Appreciate that, man. Appreciate that. Definitely. Thank you again. Thank you again, man. And thank you to everyone. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter as well at Red Podcast. At BRED Podcast. Look forward to talking to you all soon.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.